Well, topsy-turvy and wreck the discotheque. Tonight we have Josh Mallerman on the show. How's it going, Josh?
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
Excellent.
In advance for having me. This is wonderful.
Well, you are most welcome, and I am going to thank you for coming on the show because I like having interesting, different, new people on.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that I fit that criteria.
Excellent. Actually, yes, you definitely fit that criteria. I mean, I've heard of you. Well, we've been Facebook friends for a long time. But I've heard of your books. You've written a couple.
Yeah, I sure have. In fact, I think I'm up to 38 now, which is kind of insane, but also kind of, what's the right word? If you work steadily and time passes, the number grows. And so I write about 2 books a year and have for about 19 years. And so, yeah, 38.
Nice. And other, sorry, I know mostly about Bird Box, mostly because that's the one everyone knows. Has any of the rest of them gotten as that high and that visible?
Well, I don't know about that visible, but there's a lot of really exciting stuff happening with other ones, like Unburied Carol is in development for a film. Daphne is in development for a film. A short story, The Jupiter Drop, is another short story. A Ben Evans film is. Inspection was with Apple for a while. House Bottom Lake with Netflix. So, I mean, a lot of like balls in the air, a lot of potential in all these different ways. We'll see which ones happen and that kind of thing. You know, it is interesting though. It's like, to me, and I'm sure people talk this way all the time. To me, all the books are the same in terms of a good or bad or best or what. Like, there's no ranking them to me. But meanwhile, Bird Box hit a nerve and broke through in a way that, oh my God, I'm like forever grateful for.
Now, I have to admit, I haven't watched the movie yet, and I haven't read the book. I read an excerpt of a passage earlier, and it's like, ooh, cool. And I read an excerpt of Mallory as well, which is the sequel to Bird Box.
Yeah, Mallory is the star of Bird Box. She's the pregnant woman who ends up in the, you know, with in the house with all the housemates trying to determine what the hell is going on in the world outside.
And Sandra Bullock's in that movie, right?
Oh yeah, she played Mallory. Yep.
So it's really disappointing to myself that I haven't watched that, because I love Sandra Bullock, and then the basic concept behind the movie was like, I could watch this. I'm sure I'd enjoy this.
Yeah,
that's me kicking myself.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I mean, I think I'd have it on DVD somewhere. I just have so many of those to watch that it's like, okay, eventually I'll get to all of them. So, you've been writing for 19 years, and this one comes out of the blue, Bird Box, and it just sweeps everything up. Now, do you feel you've changed as a writer? I know you did music as your rock band as well, and does that give you a different bent in life now as an author and everything?
I mean, you know, it's hard to say. Before Bird Box came out, you know, our band was touring, oh gosh, 6-7 years, 200 something shows a year. We, you know, we were living, and this is not a joke, we were doled out $10 a day from the band. You had to kind of stretch it for the duration of the day, because we were only playing for, like, you know, however many people showed up in all these towns and everything. It's not like we were some huge band. We're still a band, by the way, and we just released an album. But so in some ways, I mean, Bird Box and all this has changed everything in major ways. Like, I bought my first house. I bought my first car. I'm 47 years old. I bought my first house at 44. I bought my first car at like 43 or something. Like, so
the car one I'll give you is being okay. That's a little later. The house, yeah, we're close to ages, not too far away.
But I mean, just meaning that it was, I'm the kind of guy who believes, you know, what's the right phrase for this? That your, like, daily experience, where you live, who you live with, the things you encounter daily, play a major role in your mood and in your perspective and this kind of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was completely broke and on the road and all that, it was some of the most glorious years of my life. But to have the stability of a home and an office to write in. So have I changed? I mean, I don't know. I'm still writing 2 books a year. You know, by the time Bird Box came out, I had written some 14 novels already. And Bird Box was the first one published. But all that means is I was writing 2 books a year for like 7 years before then. So, ever since it has come out, I've still written 2 books a year, but only about 1 book a year comes out. So what this means is there's an insane backlog now. There's like a 25 novel backlog now. But like, I would rather maintain what I was doing before rather than like now writing for strategy's sake, or writing for trends' sake, or writing for trying to outdo Bird Box or make the bestseller list. It's like, hey, whatever you were doing before got you here. Just keep doing what you were doing.
Mm-hmm. Nope, totally get it. Technically speaking, that was a trick question, because every day that you live is a change in your life, and you are always changed by every moment and every experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. So like I said, I like to throw in trick questions sometimes. I think that'll be the only trick question. Yeah, we'll leave it at that one. So, as you were just about to start into that, the writing style that you're creating is for yourself or for your consuming public?
Well, I don't... You know, I've heard people say, like, both ways on that. I just don't even really, like, think of things in those terms. I'm not, like... You know, I've heard people say, you know, I write the books that I wish were written, or I hear people say, like, I write for an audience, or I just write for myself. I don't even know. I get super turned on by a scenario, by a premise, by the conceit, the idea for the novel. And then, you know, with that combined with, like, the right timing, meaning, like, I finished a rewrite, I have an open space in my schedule, whatever, just ends up being then it's time for the next book. I rarely think of it like, oh, readers today like this, you know, let's do that. That's like a moving target, as you know. It's like a moving target, and you're never going to hit that. And I think most people know that, though. Like, the horror scene doesn't feel like everyone's treading on each other's, you know, successes or trying to follow each other up. It does feel like everyone is doing their own thing or something, or their own unique, you know, thing with the genre. So I almost feel like the entire scene is operating the same way I am, which is not really following trends and just writing from the heart.
Cool. But yes, and I think that within horror, there is so many things that you can explore, basically small story, medium story, and huge stories, that you're right. I think there's a lot that people can work with. And then I think there is that Hollywood-style mentality segment that says, we need more of whatever was just popular 5 minutes ago. But well, there's still a lot out there.
Right, that side of it, for sure. The film side of it, I'll encounter. It's amazing, because like, you'll have a meeting with somebody 1 week, and then a movie will do well, you know, in the interim between the next meeting with them. And the next meeting, they're talking about a movie like that movie. And you're like, wait, really? This movie just came out, and now this is your benchmark. So, yeah, you definitely experience that sort of like the, you know, dog chasing its tail on the
sequelitis.
Yeah, or as you were saying, or as whatever, imitating it or whatever, like, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a Hollywood is terrible for this, and it's only in America that it has this. When you go either in Canada, where I'm from, or you go into Europe, you go into a bunch of other countries, they make movie to make a story. They don't make a movie to make a franchise.
Yep. And I am with that 100%.
Excellent. Because I love a lot of foreign movies, a lot of independent movies. I find they're just so much more fun and so much more heart in it. And it's just, for the most part, just interesting. May not necessarily have the biggest budgets in the world, but the story is not always need to be driven by the budget.
No doubt. And I'm not really a big fan of, like, even in novels, I'm not a huge fan of, like, action sequences. That's not the right way to say it, because great action is great action, and a great fight is a great fight scene. But that vibe of, like, the Hollywood, you know what I'm talking about, the spectacles thing.
The glitz.
I liked the movie Maverick, and I can't even believe I'm talking about that movie right now. I liked it, you know, and I have fun with it. But, like, you know, obviously my heart is with much, much richer things, similar to what you're describing.
Yeah. No, Maverick had some cool shots, but the story was pretty basic and simple. It was predictable, but it looked cool. Some of those shots were like, oh my God, that is an amazing thing to capture on film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking about Fast 10 with a friend the other day, and it's like, well, it was better than Fast 9. I have a science thing. It's like, if you don't take me out of the groove and you have a good story, I'm okay with it. It's like, it can be completely unbelievable, but as long as you don't take me out of the groove, as soon as you do something that's so stupid, that it's like, there is no way in God's green earth that that could happen, I'm now nitpicking everything in the movie. Unless I know, I'm not doing it.
I haven't seen any of those movies.
It's okay. You're not really missing anything. I think the first one was actually pretty good because I enjoyed that one. But all the rest of them after that, it's like I hit and pass for me.
Yeah, sure. Makes sense.
But yeah. So if we're going to talk about movies then for a second, what is your favorite kind of movie besides Bird Box?
No, stop. I've always been like a fan of sort of like relationship drama movies. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is probably the most thrilling thing I've ever seen. And I watch it about once a year. And for a long time, Woody Allen movies did that for me, the like infidelity and the inner relationships. And those were always like, even when I was very young, like that was such like Fatal Attraction and such thrilling dynamics between families and lovers and things like that. And I would love to, you know, one day, not, I don't want to say write the horror equivalent to that, but to write a novel that like lands that someone might say, like, you know, that it reminds them of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf or that kind of thing. And it's more of a horror novel. Those are typically like the ones that like really like I'll walk away like, not feeling changed, but feeling like I like richer. And in terms of like horror, the ones that get me are typically very small set pieces, like Blair Witch Project still pisses me up. Paranormal Activity, and I'm not just talking about found footage, but I do seem to have a sweet spot for that stuff. But there's something about the small horror scenario, like really like the Twilight Zone in general, right? Mm-hmm. That has turned me on since day one. Just, and it's not, it's just because I think the smaller the setting, the smaller the scenario, the more it feels like a corner of the universe that you're visiting. The more it feels like a pocket of reality versus a global, you know, epidemic kind of thing, or pandemic. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Like that.
The intimate horror.
Yeah, but it can still be like a mammoth theme. Yeah. In there. So for me, Bird Box originally, meanwhile, that book is about like this global event, but in the original draft of the book, there's like there's barely any mention of any like news reports or anything like that at all. And essentially it was just these housemates in a house being told that outside, if you look at these creatures, you will be driven to death, essentially. And that felt Twilight Zone-y to me. So meanwhile, here's this global event umbrella over the book, but the book Bird Box is a very, very small story, and I've always been attracted to that kind of thing for sure.
Okay, I'm going to recommend two movies if you haven't seen them, and then we're going to get back to the Bird Box and Mallory story themes. Have you seen a movie called Rec, R-E-C, with the square brackets?
Like no, I haven't, but I got you it. I know. I
you
know.
Have to. The first movie. The second movie, for sure, because the first movie does its thing. It's all in this one little apartment building. And then the second movie is the exact same story continuing on, but from another perspective. And the third movie is like a parallel prequel. And then the fourth movie is like a true sequel. And I'm a huge fan. It's one of my favorite movies. And it works as a found footage series of movies. Like, the reason that you have the found footage exists for a reason. And it makes perfect sense. So I'm not going to spoil any of it, but it's a good movie.
I am literally writing this down as you're saying it. What was the other movie?
The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Oh, loved it. Loved it. That's a great example. Totally. What we're talking about, the great example. Because it does feel like bigger than this one, like morgue setting thing, right? it feels like a bigger set piece than that, but it's not. And I think there's a way to do that, like where you don't have to say all the characters are trapped in, you know, one school bus. It doesn't, but sometimes that kind of thing is amazing too. Max Booth, a writer friend of mine, wrote, we need to do something. The family gets trapped in the bathroom for the whole book. And sometimes that's freaking awesome too. And that book is amazing and Max is amazing. But what you and I are discussing right now doesn't have to be that. Like, doesn't have to be, you're only in one room and this is your only reality. No. You can take, like Bird Box, this global scenario, but focus in so much that it is this little pocket of a story.
Yes.
I'm going to guess that Wreck is actually like that too. It must be a global event or more than just the apartment building, the event, right?
Well, the first movie, it's just about what's happening. And you know that there's more stuff going, right. But it's not a worldwide event yet. That sort of happens in the background and then kind of really kicks in the third.
But you know that it's also happening outside of this building.
Not yet. That's the thing. Movie number one does it.
That's cool. Yeah, I need to watch this, don't I?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's
a
cool,
Spanish movie, so it's subbed and dubbed. But it's like, it's truly an awesome, really well-done movie. The action scenes, intensity, the characters. I love all of the characters.
Cool. Okay.
And there's only a handful of them. It's like maybe about 10, 15 total characters. And it's easy to love and hate each one and for different reasons. I should probably go and tell them I proselytize this movie all the time because I do.
So I have been, not to derail this conversation, I have been, you're not going to believe this.
But sure, I will.
I have made it to age. Yeah, I'll bet you I do, Josh. I have made it to age 47 without ever having seen a single thing David Lynch has done. So I have been recently on this amazing kick with my manager where we've been watching first.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that on your Facebook.
We've been watching first movies by directors, okay?
Yeah.
So watch the first movie by Danny Boyle, the first by the Wachowskis, the first by I can't even remember, but it led to the first by David Lynch, Eraserhead. So, and it was tempting with each director, right? It was tempting to then go on to their second movie, but the game we were playing was just first movies. But after I saw Eraserhead, I was like, you know what? No, I'm actually going to go on. I'm going to watch this guy's entire filmography. So I'm four features deep and I'm about halfway through Twin Peaks. And I mean, talk about filling a gap. Talk about, I cannot believe that I did not know about this before. I had like a sense, but I think I like erroneously thought it was like more like chic or more rockabilly or more.
They gave that impression a lot visually.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm just kind of like, oh, you know, this is a little hipper than me or something like that. And either I've become hipper. No, I'm just kidding. it's just, I'm truly loving this, like this deep dive into just this one artist.
Yeah. Lynch has some good taste in the way he does that. And he doesn't stay the same every time. Like every project seems to evolve in a different direction and like zigzags to different points. And it's like, he's got some cool shit out there.
Yeah. Again. So on the feature side, I'm only up to, let me just make sure I'm right here. Blue Velvet. I haven't even seen, Wild at Heart, Mulholland Drive. I haven't seen Lost Highway. None of those yet. Will Fire Walk With Me? None of those yet.
Crash. There's half a dozen movies that I've seen of his that are awesome. Actually, probably more than half. But yeah, no, it's cool. I don't normally identify to the director for movies. I usually identify to the overall package behind it. So, I mean, I love directors, I love actors, and I love the way certain things move, and I watch all sorts of random. Do you know that there's more than 1,000 horror movies released every year? And over last 10 years, it's been increasing in quantity?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, novels as well. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, sometimes if I'm ever like feeling, you know, low on myself or just, I'm that way, which isn't really that often, to be honest with you, but if I'm ever like a little freaked out, it's like I remind myself like how lucky I am about Bird Box. Like, dude, there's like you said, 1,000 movies a year, a horror movie, and 1,000 novels. And Bird Box was a bestseller. And the thing on the movie on Netflix was like the number at the time, the number one most watched. That is like, as I said before, like I cannot express to you how grateful I am for all this.
And it's still in rotation there too, because it still pops up on my feed every once in a while. I was like, I should watch that.
Well, there is a spinoff coming out in 2 weeks.
Excellent.
Or in 3 weeks, sorry.
So yes, and I do have to say, because I have the picture that I put up to circulate, I love the bookcase in the back behind you.
Oh, cool. You know what, man? My younger brother made that for me.
Excellent.
He was working on it for a while, and working on it long enough that I was kind of like imagining him delivering this Victorian bookcase with like little doors and windows, you know? No, he showed up with a coffin. There's even like dirt and grass on it and stuff.
Excellent. And the two big eyeballs on the top?
Oh, you know what? That's funny. Those aren't there anymore. I just looked up like, what? But yeah, I used to keep those up there. Yeah.
They're cool looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So have you hit the million mark on words written?
Oh, yeah. Here, okay, cool. Let me hold on. Hold on. I just want to figure this out.
You have a record. Okay.
Pretty close. Hold on.
As most writers who get into it quite a bit, we usually have a record of how many words we've gotten to. I haven't hit a million yet. I think I'm still at about 600,000 or 700,000 or whatever. But I'm getting there soon. I've just been a little slow myself. I'm just filling in as you go and look for your words.
I'm at 3,230,000.
Most awesome. So yes. How long is the average book you do put that together?
About 85, something like that.
85, okay.
Yeah.
Which is good for movie adaptations, because they usually are, what, anywhere from 60 to 80,000 words on average for a script treatment?
I mean, I guess it's hard to say. Like, Bird Box, it was only 68K, and that movie, like, you know, didn't use a lot of scenes, right? So
right.
It seems like the novella is almost ideal if you want to sort of verbatim, you know, transfer, right, or adaptation. But, I mean, so much is going to be changed, whatever. It's really hard to say, almost. But I almost feel like 85 is longer, is like too long for like the ideal movie length seems more like 40K to me or something.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember reading, because like different set scenes, decorations, explanations and stuff like that, the average movie adaptation was 80,000. Oh, this was in because of Lord of the Rings. Yeah, the Lord of the Rings books were like 100,000 words or whatever per thing. But then the actual movie adaptation was like 80,000. So it's like you're talking, oh, these people are whining about how there's missing scenes. It's like, dude, you can't put everything in. It's just not possible.
Yeah. You know, I just read that entire series recently, like a couple months ago.
Was that the first time you read it?
First time in my life. Yeah, you're witnessing me filling all these gaps. But but it's kind of like what's a gap of yours? Like I'm sure you have one. Like what's one you've never heard, you know, Tommy by the Who or whatever the hell it is. Like, what's a gap for you?
Well, I can tell you something I've never watched and have never intended to watch it, and that's the movie Titanic.
Okay. All right. I don't know if I would consider that a gap or not. Like, do you have well, you said you don't go by directors. Are there like maybe an author where you're like, for some reason I never read Hemingway or that kind of thing?
Not per se. I mean, my first real experience to say I really love reading was Dante, and that was when I was like 15-14 or whatever, and that was what really got me into the whole I like horror, I like science fiction and stuff.
Oh, that's cool. That's making me want to. I read that in college. I would love to revisit that right now.
Me too. I just never have the time to read like that anymore.
Why?
I don't know. It's just so, well, okay, I will explain a little bit about my life. Full-time job, okay. Radio okay. Show, comic book shop on the weekends. I have a whole half dozen other little couple of hobbies that I deal with in time. And I just never seem to have the time. But knowing that, I also know very full well that if I wanted to do something, there's the time block. Just do it.
Yeah, no, you're right. There is, I mean, I don't have kids, so let's preface this by saying that. But it does seem to me that there is enough time in the day to do everything I want to do. And one thing that my fiance Allison and I have sort of come to realize is, like, this is going to sound a little cold, but if you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. So
correct.
So yeah, so if like a friend says, let's go to lunch, and you're like, okay, then you're not going to do the copy edit for that short story in that 2 hour stretch instead. And
Or vice
so,
versa.
or vice versa. So there are enough hours in the day to get done what you want to get done, but that doesn't mean that it's easy to block that stuff off. For me, I do tend to go on like work benders. Like recently I filmed a documentary of writing a novel. Okay. Like I've
Cool.
done that. It's like the process of writing a novel. So as if writing a novel wasn't enough work, documenting it, right? And that was immediately followed by making an album, which was immediately followed by an instrumental album, which was immediately followed by a rewrite of a different novel. And at the end of all that, I was a little stretched, a little anxious, a little insane feeling. But you know what, man? I
Felt
rewrote
good.
that. I rewrote that
Yeah.
book, made the doc. I made the album. I didn't, you know. So it's like there's kind of that trade-off there. It's not the easiest thing to do, but I almost equate it to like people, and I probably should do more of this. People who like work out regularly. Like I'm in writing shape. I'm in recording shape. And I even think with reading, if you're not in reading shape, a novella can look daunting. If you are in reading shape, you can grab Don Quixote and you're like, screw it, man, let's roll.
I just realized and remember something. When I said 80,000 words and 100,000 words, I had that wrong. It was the number of pages, 300 pages versus 80 pages. I just wanted to clarify that. But yes, you're totally correct. That focus, that mental discipline, is, I think, what differentiates somebody who is a professional writer such as yourself, and people like myself, who I'm kind of getting a lot laxer than I used to, but I should really get back to it, and I will get back to it, gosh darn it.
I don't mean to keep asking you questions. I'm not that kind of guy, but why do you think you're getting laxer?
Well, there's probably 100,000 things, but it all boils down to that one personal pivot point where you're doing that trade-off value. Is it, am I enjoying the moment, or am I enjoying the workload of getting towards achieving something at the end of it? So the trade-off being, I'm enjoying the moment more than I'm enjoying the workload to get to that bigger payoff.
Yeah, that is. By the way, I hope you're recording. I mean, are all these episodes recorded?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I really enjoy what you're saying. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. But the irony here, or the real issue here, is that enjoying the moment, or you know, like that's just as wonderful too. And
That's
it's like,
life.
right, and that's life. And but some people will say, and it's like I almost roll my eyes at it. You know, if I post online like I did this and this and this. So I'm gonna be like, hey, Josh, you need to take a break and live. And I'm like, yes, I know. Oh my God, stop. Yes, I know I need to live. I need to experience. Don't even, you know. But I do know certain people who that's all they do. And they're not creating, and they are in the moment, and they are having like a peaked experience and a rewarding experience. And sometimes I'm like enamored with that. I'm like, wow, this girl, they don't need to mark the moment in time with a novel or a series of photos or whatever it is. They just exist, and there is something thrilling about that to me.
Oh, I'll totally agree with you. Because
Yeah.
the thing, like, I used to be a workaholic. I still am to a degree. So I have weeded myself off a lot of that. I kept identifying myself as the work that I am. And it's like, no, that has to be just what I do, not who I am. And
Okay.
separating those things out is much more soul satisfying than working till I die, kind of thing.
Absolutely. If you're talking about a job or working that like isn't like a passion or a soul, you know, job, then absolutely 100%. But if the workaholic, you know, the work you're doing is making films, writing novels, that kind of thing. Then in that scenario, I think it is okay to find your identity in there. Like my agent has warned me before, like, hey Josh, you don't want to find your identity in your work and your writing, because like what if like let's imagine writer's block happened, or the books, you know, you can't get a book published or something. Then that may turn on you, right? You'll be like, oh my God, I can't write. That means all of me is stuck or something. Okay. And I get that. And there is some danger there in that tightrope. But at the same time, look at the positive identity traits to discover in the work, the artist workaholic, right? Is like that, like the confidence of, I have an idea and I actually come through and I do it. And I did it well. And I worked on it extra hard to make it good. There's like so many things in there that are positives to take away in an identity way. But if we're talking about work that isn't your passion, then oh yeah, no. To be a workaholic about something that isn't your passion is, that sounds dangerous to me.
True, but you can still have a passion within that work. Purchasing, inventory, those were my shticks because I'm really good at it. So I enjoy it, but at the same time, I leave the office. That has to be the end of it. You can't keep thinking about it and dragging it home and letting it pull in.
Sure, I understand.
Wait, now I'm talking about my therapy thoughts. Damn it!
No, no, but it is super interesting, man. That idea, you know, I'll never forget seeing my agent send that because it's something I have thought about endlessly since then. Like, do not find your identity, Josh, in how you react to an argument with Allison. In how you love her, in how you talk to your family, in whether or not you follow the speed limit. And which I'm just saying, like, find your identity in daily life versus your work or whatever. But I've just never quite seen writing novels as work. I've seen it, and that doesn't mean I just see it as, a hobby or playing. Oh my God, no. It's such a wonderfully pure, joyful space. Yes, it's exhausting, anxiety inducing, all these things, and I want to get this right and I want to get that right, but at the same time it's such a special place to me that I think it's okay to find myself in there.
Cool. And just so you know, I'm really enjoying this conversation, and this is the way I'd like to do most of my interviews. It's not a script, not a bunch of questions. It's like, let's have a discussion. Usually by this time I'd be talking about writing process, but this is cool. But you've got an opportunity that you have taken advantage of, is you have some diversification. You have a career as a musician, you have a career as a writer, you have a career as a movie and documentarian. So a lot of that, and that, by the way, it shows that your agent cared enough to be able to give you that hint that says
100%.
Don't be that guy that loses his shit when he's been doing it for so many years and all of a sudden it's like, what? That's like this. It's the worst thing in the world to have any kind of occupation, to be stuck and fixated on that one thing and not be able to get past it.
I agree. And but here, let me take you to a moment. I lived in New York City from 98 to like 2001. And it was 2002, actually, I think. And I was at a party. And back then, you know, I was trying to write novels, but not pulling them off, like not knowing how to finish them, you know? And I have a songwriting partner in our band. We all lived there, but we were writing songs at this insane pace. You know, I think in the 4 years we recorded something like, well, I don't know, whatever it was, 100 or something. And at this party, this one guy said to me, he's like, listen, man, you're going to burn out. Like the pace that you're going at, you are going to burn out. You're moving a mile a minute. You're constantly creating, you're talking a mile a minute, all this kind of stuff. And it kind of freaked me out. You know, I was at like a party, you know, like, and I'm this dude from Michigan and I'm in this New York party, you know, and this guy is saying, this is older guy, you know, it kind of scared me, you know. But then, and I don't mean this in a vengeful way or a vindication way, but now here I am 38 novels and like 20 albums later. And
success,
I'm like,
success is the best revenge.
Yes, I just saw that quote yesterday, man.
I don't remember where it comes from, but I've heard it in Klingon. And it's like, yeah.
I think it's Oscar Wilde.
Okay, yeah, probably. Sounds like
it. Yeah, that guy was a quote dispenser, man. That guy. so I don't know. Like, but then it's like, okay, but did he mean burnout at age 50? Because I'm not there yet. You know? So, but I just see it as like, yes, there is that danger, and you're totally right, man, about, and I did see it that way, that my agent was sending like a caring wink wink, you know?
Yeah.
And but at the same time, there are some of us, and I think Hitchcock was like this.
Mm-hmm.
I know I already brought up Woody Allen, and I realized
Lynch is like this.
Well, yes and no, because he, oh yeah, right, because he like paints and writes and does all this other stuff. Yeah, since then, yeah. I just was reading about that. Have you read one of his books?
No, I've, oh wait, I think I may have read part of one, but that was like a decade or so ago.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm definitely interested now. This guy's an interesting dude.
Yes, and he's Canadian.
Oh yeah, oh wait, I thought he was born in Montana.
I don't know. I just always say he's Canadian. Everybody's Canadian as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Montana's pretty darn close.
Sure. Yeah, it is.
But also so is Detroit, which is where I am right now. I'm like 13 miles from Windsor.
Cool. I've been to Detroit. Not the best drive I've ever done.
What'd you go there for?
On the way to Gen Con. Like, we're talking years and years ago when Gen Con was in Lake Geneva.
Where is Lake Geneva?
The low point of Lake Michigan, I think, if I want to say.
Okay.
Like the most southern tip or whatever. Can't remember. All I know is it was a 17-hour drive when we went the stupid way. We went over the top of Lake Michigan. It was like, never again.
Yeah.
But yeah, Detroit was an odd city. It was like, it was always under construction from what I understand. I'd been through it like three or four times and that's it. So obviously not a big enough sample to really go by. But it was like every single and they have crazy on and off ramps in there for the highway.
Boom, oh, yeah.
There you go. Boom,
oh, yeah.
There you're off. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you got to be like ready for all. You have to pre-plan those moments. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to be watching. Tromp on the gas. Boom. There you're in. Emerge. Fortunately, we didn't get into accidents, so it was all good. But yeah, the world is weird. I'm sticking with that. I continuously go with the whole thing. It's like everybody's different. Everybody's got different stresses and good points and bad points and whatever. And you're exactly right, I think, as far as some people can be extreme joy in the occupations that they do because they love it. And having that love for it, that passion for it, is not just the bits and pieces. It's the whole totality of it. It's certain things make sense in a moment and then certain other things don't. And it's how you integrate all those things. It's like you move from moment to moment.
I agree. And in the same way that you were describing Toronto earlier, constantly changing. And what you said before, where are you changed by Bird Box, you're changed by everything. And I do think that there's there's a lot of wisdom to be found in rolling with those changes, rolling with the changes in society, rolling with the changes of the times, rolling with the changes within yourself. Meaning, at the very least, don't just resist them point blank. You know, if you want, let's say I'm a horror author, and I suddenly have an idea for a book that's not a horror novel. Hey, man, don't just rule that out. Like, consider this, and not in a strategic sales way. Consider why would you want to write this surreal novel or this comedy or whatever it might be. And that's just, you know, another example of rolling with the changes. And I think that's the kind of thing that you can't entirely what's the right word? You can't plan for or prepare for until
you can't
they start
plan for success.
Well, or you can't plan for like and this is not true in my case, but your brother marries the wrong person and now you got to deal with a strange relationship, or you suddenly find yourself more mindful of like maybe other people that you didn't realize you would be mindful. Whatever these things are, roll with those for a minute before declaring a definitive, like permanent opinion on them.
Yeah, a lot of people nowadays want to just take an immediate perception of what they see or who they see or what, why, and et cetera. It's like, man, this, and then just make that decision to close that out or ignore it completely. Whereas if you just stop for a second and said, I don't know his story, I don't know her story, and that's okay. I don't need to be that.
If you don't mind me giving a current event, it's not political.
Shoot.
So there's this thing happening right now with the...
the sub?
Yes, with the submarine. And I'm seeing a lot of people post online like, you know, oh, the rich guy shouldn't have gone down there. And I'm just kind of like, oh, whoa. This is a really scary thing happening to some people right now. You have no idea if this is a good person or not, like a cool guy or a bad, a funny person, a caring person. You have no idea. The only thing that you're judging this on is like he's wealthy or something.
Yep.
And it's like, and that's like to me, and there are people that I like really respect that are posting these things, and that's exactly what I'm talking about in those terms of like rolling with the changes or whatever. Like this moment comes up, like even if you find yourself like nobody should have that much money. Okay. Also, nobody should be stuck in a minivan at the bottom of the ocean, dude, either.
But he's doing something that he probably enjoys and is doing it not necessarily. And I don't know him. I don't know him well enough. He's somebody's father, somebody's brother, somebody's son.
Right.
And I have no opinion on the guy whatsoever because I know nothing about him except for that he was on the first dive to the Titanic in the first place. So he's trained and he knows this. So what has occurred? We don't know. We won't know for months, probably, unless they pull him up before the end of tomorrow, whatever, when their air is supposed to run out.
Yep, exactly. And I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And again, not political, but it's the kind of thing where I'm very careful online. I don't want to give like an opinion on something that I don't know everything about. And I don't know everything about writing, but I know enough about writing to talk about it. I know enough about my experiences to weigh in and these kind of things. So oftentimes there'll be like either a celebrity or a famous like situation at hand where you'll see a bunch of people weighing in and it's like, no, I don't know everything here, so I'm not gonna weigh in. And now again, I can, and I mean this, I can relate this back to that idea of not following trends.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the writing where it's like, hey, let's not just get wrapped up in like this permanent opinion of what's going on here. Now let's hook this back to books. Hey, let's not get wrapped up in like a vampires are hot right now, or slashers are hot, or slow horror is selling. No. Like, let's stick to, like, not to put yourself on an island, but to remain yourself in the face of these like changing quote unquote trends, stories, things we read online. It's not the easiest thing to do. You think back to, not frontier days, oh my God, even like the 80s. Like, you know, in the 80s, like I would, you know, my friend, we'd be like, hey, let's meet at the Peanut Barrel on Tuesday at 7. And then magically he was there Tuesday at 7. And there was something then about,
no apps.
No, with no apps. And there was something about that era where you weren't asked to constantly weigh in on everything, constantly make a decision on everything.
Somebody's made a comment in the chat room that specifically speaks to that. Being self-authentic.
Say it again.
Being self-authentic.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. So we have a chat room, in case you were wondering. There are, well, it's only one person in there right now, but we got a couple people. There was three or four other ones in there as well. They only just started showing up half an hour ago, so it's like, why are you people late?
yeah, you know.
But whatever. But yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's so much going on in the world, and nowadays we're flooded and inundated with all of the data about how much this person's bad life has been, how much this person's good life is. I mean, all the stuff, not being political as well, but Pat Robertson passed away, and right afterwards there's all these memes and everything coming out. I don't necessarily know anything about them. Didn't do anything for me, but how can you say things about them without even knowing them?
Yeah, I don't know him. Like, I literally don't know this scenario like well enough at all to even like even respond to that. But I do know that in a general sense, if I do not know the subject, if I don't know it like for a fact, or if I don't know the subject inside out, I just can't weigh in, man. And so even in the confines of horror, right? I mean, look, I'm telling you, I'm discovering David Lynch just now at age 47. And it's like, what was I gonna like weigh in about? Imagine me writing about, oh, Blue Velvet looks dumb 10 years ago.
Well, it did look dumb, but it was still a neat movie.
But you get exactly what I mean. It's like,
now
by the end of this journey that I'm on with this artist, I will have something to say about him, and I will along the way. And that to me, you can apply that to what we're talking about with like the social stuff, with your relationships, with your identity, and with your what's it called, your like artistic habits, all these kind of things. You can relate that same sort of thing of like remain yourself, like and find your identity not in the reaction to these events going on, but how you conduct yourself in your daily life, your daily work, and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. So I was just trying to find the name of a movie off the top of my head. It was a David Lynch movie, I'm pretty sure of it, but I can't remember the name of it. And it's freaking me out because if you ever watch it, it's a messed up movie. Oh, not Talking Dune. But Dune, have you seen the Dune David Lynch movie yet?
Well, yep, because that, so I'm doing it in order, and Dune was his third movie.
That
and
was number three, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I guess maybe he doesn't have top billing in this movie that I'm thinking about, and maybe somebody else did it. But it was a weird-ass movie. So, not him, not a problem. Not going to mention any more about it. But yeah, exactly. So, getting back to Bird Box and Mallory, one of the things I was noticing when I read those excerpts is if that book had come out during the pandemic, I think it would have even sold more.
Well, Mallory did.
Yes, Mallory, I saw that.
Yeah. So if Bird Box had come out, gosh, it would have been such an odd thing, right, man? Because yeah. I wrote the rough draft to Bird Box in 06. I rewrote it in a major, major way in 2012. Sold it to HarperCollins in 2012. It comes out in 2014. The movie comes out in almost 2019. And then the pandemic is a year later.
Yeah.
So I have been with Mallory in this scenario for, oh my gosh, 13 years or something by the time this, or 14, by the time the pandemic comes out. But meanwhile, Mallory was written in like 18 and comes out during that pandemic. And it was a strange feeling because I was worried that people might feel like, oh, this guy's trying to capitalize on this. But no, this was written years ago.
Yes, that's kind of what I was like. Okay, I'm reading this. It's like, I can find so many allusions towards COVID here. And after the whole pandemic and the shutdowns and everything else has occurred, pretty much everything I'm reading now has some kind of link that I could say, oh, but if you put it in this context, it's like that. And you still see that.
What do you mean? Explain it a little more.
Well, for Bird Box and Mallory, the idea that you have to wear a blindfold to be able to get by is so much a simple connection to having to wear a mask. Wearing a mask is a simple medical thing that's been around for centuries. It's not a sudden, this is a thing that you do just to say stay.
I know.
It's always been around.
I know. It's like you might want to do it if your friend has the flu, for crying out loud. Like it's not a big deal. Yeah, I know. You know what's interesting?
I wonder so many things.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes, I agree. I didn't mean to cut you off. I hope I didn't. But this is kind of interesting because Mallory. So I don't expect you to know this because you haven't read Mallory. But right. Mallory is staunchly pro mask. Let's say.
Yeah. Blindfold. Oh no! I got that in the first pages or whatever that was there.
Right. But meanwhile, she would be considered the conservative, old school, old world person. Meanwhile, her son, in Mallory, her son is progressive, and he's the one saying, no, we don't need those anymore. We can do it like this way. So it's almost like this skewed version of what we were experiencing in reality, where the progressive was saying, no, we don't need the mask, and the conservative was, the old school conservative was saying, yes, we do, which I found to be kind of an interesting thing in Mallory.
Excellent. Now, yeah, no, it's like just that couple page blurb is like, oh, or sorry, the excerpt on Amazon or whatever was like, wow, COVID. I see this right here, just clear as a bell. And Tom, oh, I hate wearing a mask. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. And again, that was written 2 years before. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
And then all of these people who have put out stuff that's just like, oh yeah, we're going to take advantage of this right now and do all this stuff. And it's like, boom, speed writing.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Okay. The movies that came out, you know, I'm a zombie. I don't know if you know, but I'm a zombie fan. I've watched many, zombie movies. COVID Zombies came out like 2 months after the outbreak happened. It's like, what the hell?
Wow.
And then there's like, I think 14 different, if I remember correctly from a list, COVID-related zombie movies. Oh, and one shark movie.
What? Wow, really?
Virus Shark. Look it up. I talk about this movie. It's a Polonia Films movie. If you know who they are, you'll know what kind of movies they are. The budget on this movie is $182.
Oh, I love that kind of thing, man.
Oh, I laugh my ass off with that stuff. It's just, it's wrong, it's bad, but it's fun.
So what's it called? I'm looking it up right now. What's it called again?
Virus Shark.
Virus.
It's on Amazon Prime. It was one of these random movies. It's like, Virus Shark. Oh, zombies and sharks? Yeah, okay, I'll watch that.
That shark looks scary.
Yeah, you see him for all of like 20 seconds and that's it.
Okay.
And it's like, when you get a close-up shot, it's like, where's all that duct tape on that balloon? It's like,
what about this crazy dude with the mullet and the gun and the muscles?
Oh, here's a good question in the chat room. But yes, no, the movie is stupid as shit, but it's funny.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Predicted prophetic events in your books?
Where do you? I'm just curious. I mean, where do you see the? I have the chat pulled up, but I don't see the question.
www.tmvcafe.com/radio. So that goes straight to the chat room. You scroll down a bit.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the question?
Have you often predicted prophetic events in your books? And if not often, at all?
Well, obviously the Bird Box Mallory thing. I do think that something a bit with Inspection. Inspection, I wrote in 07, and it was written, I'm sorry, it's the story of a guy who believes that he was distracted by, like, you know, chasing love and sex or whatever in his teen years. So he raises boys and girls without the knowledge of each other's existence, right? So he thinks that he's raising geniuses by removing distraction. So if these 26-year-old babies that are now 14 years old when the book begins have no concept that women exist and vice versa for the women. And so that book does have a lot of, you know, in terms of like gender and the identity of this kind of thing and what it means for each other, this kind of thing. Inspection, there was something a bit, I don't want to say prophetic, but there was some, and this was written in 07. There was something there, just Inspection makes a lot more sense now than it did in 07. And there are, you know, I wouldn't say there's that many like that, but Inspection seems to hit that chord. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that was an interesting thing. And what's, okay, so we had the Stoker Awards recently, and I know you had the one book up for Stoker. So you were at the Stokers?
I didn't go, you know.
Oh.
You know, I've been to a few of them. I've been to most since being published.
Okay.
And Pittsburgh's only a 4-hour drive from here. But, you know, I told you I did the documentary and wrote the novel and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I think I just needed to, like, pause for a second, like, if I would have gone, probably wouldn't have the time of my life. Like, I wouldn't have, like, sulked or anything. But I think I just needed to be like, hey, Allison, I'm just going to, like, stay home for a minute and maybe not do much of anything for, like, a couple weeks. And so I didn't go.
Like taking a vacation, as I use the air quotes that nobody can see.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, so if you're close to Pittsburgh, have you ever been to Evans City, or what the hell was the other one? Where was Monroeville? Are you a zombie fan at all?
Oh, are you talking about the Night of the Living Dead stuff?
Yeah.
No, I haven't been there, no.
Oh, okay. So I was there the 1 year, and this is like about 13 years ago now. And they have this awesome convention there. It's called Horror Realm. And it's not a very big convention, but it's like just... Okay, that's going to lead me into a question. It's a great convention to go to, and I know that they're still going, But it's one of these tiny things. But going to visit the place where they filmed that movie and the spot where Barbara is grabbing onto the cenotaph or whatever as her brother is chasing her, it's like, they're coming to get you, Barbara. It was like so much coolness.
No, I went to Estes Park, Colorado, which is the hotel, not where The Shining was filmed and not where he wrote the book, but where Stephen King got the idea for The Shining. That's how famous that guy is that the hotel is a tourist attraction, just where he got the idea. But it was really cool to be there, and it was cool to be like in an actual like historical like the staircase in DC for The Exorcist and these kind of, it's interesting to be at these like horror like these horror landmarks,
The Stanley Hotel? So the Horror Writers Association has a writer's retreat there every once in a while.
No, I went to it once.
Oh, cool. I've never been. It's like, I don't get around that much outside of this city or out of this country. But yeah, no, it's one of those things I wanted to go to at one point.
Oh my God, I will absolutely recommend that one. You're gonna have a blast, and you do, like I went on a ghost tour of the place and whatever. You do
Nice.
get a little creeped out there, you do, but not over the top. Like it's a warm experience.
Cool. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm one of those guys. It's like you take me to a haunted house or whatever. It's like I'm the one laughing at everything, and I'm just yeah. The last one I went last year, the girls were all hanging behind me because I was just laughing my ass off the entire time.
I probably would use you as a human shield while I tremble in
That's what they
my.
were doing. I was like, oh, that's fine. I know this stuff rolls on me because I know situationally, there is nothing in this place that's going to hurt me, intentionally. And then I've seen movies like, oh, what the hell was it? Oh, well, not Hell House, but there was a
I like Hell House.
Hellfest. Hellfest.
Oh yeah, Hellfest. Yeah.
Oh, the whole murder scene was like in the Haunted Mansion thing where he's going to kill everybody.
Yeah,
Okay,
yeah.
cool. But the question I was going to get around to, as I ramble on, is do you do conventions much?
I went to one somewhat recently in Virginia. That was great. AuthorCon. I did do one in Windsor, by the way. That was great. It was a Comic-Con in Windsor. Yeah, yes and no. I probably could be doing a lot more, but at the same time, I've probably been to like 30,
Oh,
And
cool.
my first book came out in 2014. So what is that? Nine. I probably done an average of like three a year.
Very cool. And being with the publisher that you're with, you're in that category of the ones that get taken care of by the publisher. You get the funding for marketing and stuff like that. So do they can try and convince you to go to conventions and stuff like that, or do they make it easier for you to get to those?
Oh, like so far, whenever Del Rey has asked me to go to one, I've gone. So,
Cool.
but they don't always ask me to go, but they'll be like, hey, we have like Rose City in Portland, and we have this in where was that other one recently? Not Arizona. I think it was in Los Angeles. And then in New York Comic Con, these kind of things, I just go. Because it's to me it's like Del Rey wants me to go. They're paying for the flight. I mean, it doesn't even matter if they were, but they are. Let's go.
Cool. So, do you spend time with the fans? Like, okay, actually, what do you call it? Do your fans have names? Malmarians? Malamadnits.
Malarmaniacs.
Malarmaniacs. There we go.
I feel like we can do better than that. No, there is a Facebook page called the Malarmaniacs. They're
Nice.
so nice, and we had a reading for Daphne when the book launched, and one of the Malarmaniacs, or two of them actually, were there, and it was awesome to like meet them in person. It was great.
Excellent. And do you have any much in the way of experiencing toxic fans? Because this has been a thing that's been creeping up quite a bit for the last 10 years or so. It happens everywhere.
No, I don't know what that means, somebody that's like overly aggressive or that kind of thing.
It means a couple of different things. It means sometimes it's borderline psychotic slash borderline, socially not necessarily aware of how off-putting some things can be. Aggressive and abusive is one of them. The other side is sycophantic and that sort of thing. Oh, look at me using all the heavy therapy words.
Well, I think it's hard. I had one guy, I had to block someone for the first time in my life recently, but I wouldn't say he was a fan.
Okay. So he had issues and he was taking them out on you. Ish.
This guy, it seemed like he just did not want to see me succeed at anything. At first it would be kind of funny, and I would show my bandmate, his messages. I would like show them, and we would laugh a little. But then it started to get a little weirder. Like, started posting 11, like anything I posted. Like, if I played basketball that day, he'd be like, "You don't know anything about basketball." I'm like,
This
"But
is
I
toxic
do."
fanship.
Well, but I don't know what, I don't know if he was a fan or if I think he's from this area, and I think he, I don't know what his thing was. But that is the only person I have ever blocked.
Cool. Well, then you're lucky. I mean, most people I've heard that have any kind of level of success usually ends up attracting at least one or two on a semi-regular. I've even had one, and it's like, dude, no. That's just like you show up anywhere in my lifestyle, you are gone. Sounds like the start of a horror book. I've actually seen a movie where that happened. So, yeah. We have more time if you want to talk, because there's no show on after me, but if you want to roll up now, we can do that too.
I
You
wouldn't say
have
that
time commitments.
I wouldn't say that I want to roll up now, but I do think that, I mean, I guess we've talked for an hour, haven't we?
We have talked for an hour, and I haven't
Oh,
actually gone to any of my common questions.
this
This is
is
good. This is an awesome conversation.
wonderful.
I've loved this one.
Wow. Let's go to like 10:10. Let's give ourselves another like 10 minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
That's cool. So, do you read any comic books? Seeing as how I also have a comic book shop and I talk about comics all the time, do you read any comics?
Well, oddly enough, my favorite comic series I've ever experienced, and I'm not like some aficionado, but was the whole like Kraven hunting Spider-Man, that like 9-issue. You probably know what I'm talking
Yeah,
about.
I do.
And I just saw today like there's a trailer for Kraven,
Yes, there's a
and
Kraven
I
movie show coming out. Yes.
no, but I was kind of like disappointed when I saw the image, because to me,
Yeah.
Kraven is this barrel-chested, mustachioed, like this like monstrously awesome, like evil hunter guy. That
Now
series.
he's an eco terrorist.
Oh, wait, really?
Or something like that. Yeah,
Oh, gosh. Okay. But
I read the
he.
premise and it's like, nah, that's just whatever.
Oh, well. But that series, man, and you know, because of Vermin in that series too, that series was like a horror story. And he tries to bury Spider-Man alive. Remember all that stuff,
The
And
covers were awesome.
they
The
were
homage covers
so
to the different
awesome.
horror movies. I remember clearly this Jaws one.
Dude, I have those, like I think I have the first, the originals, whatever, of that series. I don't know where right now. I had them like taped up to my wall, obviously in plastic, taped up to my wall for a while. But I will say this real fast, because this is really, really fun. There is a graphic novel being made of one of my novels right now.
Excellent. Which
And
one?
so it hasn't been announced anywhere
Oh, okay.
in any way, but it's a novel that I haven't put out yet.
Oh.
So, and now I'm not going to. Like, this is it. This is the version of it. And oh my God, I saw some of the artwork, and the writing is so good. And oh, it's just awesome, man. It's just awesome. Because it really is like cinematic. I mean, like instantly cinematic, as you fully understand. And to see like a novel that you wrote that isn't out yet, like, yeah. So my comic book history, like, nah, not much. I did have all the reprints of Vault of Horror, Tales from the Crypt, all
Nice.
those. I had all those, but I was broke once and sold the whole batch for like $60 or something.
Well, the good news is they're re-releasing most of the EC horror in soft cover paperback version. So the collected editions has like about 8 or 10 issues or whatever, but in a soft cover it's like $25 Canadian or whatever. So you get all of it in a book. They're like up
Oh,
to
really?
third volume on what was it? The one just Tales from the Crypt. So it's like those are being re-released in a much more cost-effective way, because for like the last 10, 15 years, they've only been available in a hardcover collection,
yeah,
which is like 60 to 50 bucks each.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, those are phenomenal, those things.
Beautiful books, but not in a lot of people's price range.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But yeah, now the paperback versions are going to be available. And yeah, the RC Comics re-releases or whatever, I had a bunch of those. I still do have a bunch of those as well somewhere. Somewhere over there. I don't know.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, the horror comics, I'm a big fan of the horror comics. There's a lot of stuff out there.
Give me one that like thrills you. One of the horror comics.
Let's see.
Or you can do it after if you want. But
yeah, I'll send you a list of some other. I like comedy ones as well. So there's one out there called I Hate Fairyland.
Okay.
By Scotty Young. It's hilarious because it's about a young girl, like 12 years old. She gets stuck in Fairyland. It's only supposed to be there for a day or whatever. Find the key and then get out. But she gets stuck there for 22 years. So they have a censorship spell in Fairyland, so she can't swear. So she's like a 30-year-old in a 12-year-old body, and every swear word is a replacement swear word. So instead of MF, you get muffin fluffin. Exactly.
Listen, you muffin fluffin.
You muffin fluffer fluffers are going to fluff with a fluff right fluffing off.
Yeah.
As it were.
Yeah. That actually sounds more insulting.
Yeah. Which is why it was written that way. It was like hilarious. I love that series.
Yeah.
Cool. But I'm a big fan of Ghost Rider. Actually, I have a pile of books right here. Let's see if we can scan through something that triggers a positive response. A lot of... Oh, I love the Godzilla comics that they've been putting out as well. There's this one series, The Kryptonals. I love the covers. It's kind of weird. I haven't read it yet. Let's see. Wild's End looks interesting. All Eight Eyes, about giant spiders living in New York City and infesting people and trying to take over and turning them into zombies. Oh. Spawn has still been around. Oh, Archie Horror. They put out these one-shots now. Chilling Adventures Presents. This one that came out this week is Camp Pickens.
Now we're talking.
Archie. Love those things.
Horror. Yeah, I'm writing this one down, man.
Absolutely. And they've had... If you haven't read it, there's an Archie one. What the hell was it called? Oh, shit. After something. After. Well, it's a 7-issue series or whatever about zombie outbreak in Riverdale.
Oh, my God.
Here there's what is it? Vampironica. So, what the hell is her name?
Vampirella?
No, not Vamp. Well, Vampirella's been long going for a long while. But Betty. Veronica. Vampire.
Yeah.
Betty is a vampire hunter / a werewolf hunter. Jughead is a werewolf. Cherry Bomb is a witch summoning Satan and stuff like this. As they got into all this bizarre stuff. Afterlife. That's what. Afterlife with Archie.
Yeah, no. I'm looking it up right now. It looks so good. Afterlife.
It's so yummy.
Oh, this is great. So how many of these are out now?
There's only, there's about, what, I think 7 different series, and most of these series has only had like about 7 or 8 issues. There's the Sabrina one, which was good and creepy because it was very Cthulhu-esque. The vampire ones with Veronica was about 4 issues. The Jughead one is about 4 or 5 issues. But all of these are individual with trade paperbacks. They're all individually available as trades. And... We have the few that come out. They're one shots.
And you have your own store?
Yeah.
I want to order these from you.
I don't ship. Sorry.
Oh,
otherwise, I would totally do it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't do any of the online shipping. I just basically, it's a weekend thing at a flea market or whatever. And it's like, I've got a lot of comics to come in and buy. That sort of thing.
Okay. Sweet.
But otherwise, if you're ever in Toronto, let me know. I'll bring you in.
Well, we will be. Allison and I do love it there, so we will reach.
Fan Expo is coming up. That is the huge show here.
Cool.
And I'm sure they would have you as a guest.
Hell.
It comes up at the end of August. I think it's either the weekend before Labor Day or the Labor Day weekend. They flip around every once in a while because they compete with for guests for Dragon Con.
Okay.
So I know that they try to flip it on a different weekend that Dragon Con is.
I'm
So
still looking. Okay, anyway, go ahead.
there we go to the round to the end of the show.
Yes.
So what's the best way for people to follow you or stalk you or find you in your general multiple different media mayhems?
It's just Josh Mallerman. There's only one Alan Mallerman on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. And also the website though is interesting because I wrote serialized a novel on the website. The novel, I mean, it's like 80,000 or 76,000 words that is literally just sitting there for free. There's no, it's literally just sitting there to be read. And we've been shopping at the TV recently. It's called Carpenter's Farm. So the website actually does have something interesting to offer. I mean, it's just a free novel just sitting there.
There you go. Free literature to read.
And that's
Awesome.
joshmallerman.com.
Excellent. And I had a question, but it went away. Thanks, Evie. She's in the chat room. Yeah, it's gone. Okay. Well, oh yes, I remember. Congratulations on 1 million copies for Bird Box.
Yeah, wow.
Isn't
Wow,
it? Does that mess with your head?
man. I mean, a little bit yes, a little bit no. I'm not really one to like discuss much online, these kind of things, like, oh wait, we've sold this many or this kind of thing,
Yeah.
and I've just never been really that. To be honest with you, I never really want to like look at the books in those ways. Like, you've sold 50,000, you've sold only 20,000, you've sold 1 million. I just want to look at the books that way. Like, but when I got that notification, that information from my agent, I was like, wait a minute, this is crazy.
Yeah, it's a
This
mind
is crazy.
fluff. It's awesome.
My yes. So I was like, I have to announce this. I gotta post this, blah blah blah. Yeah, it's totally awesome. It blows my lid. I cannot express to you how grateful I am about Bird Box and everything that's happened. But at the same time, that book on that website that's for free, it's just as good as Bird Box. So
Exactly.
to me, it's like, yes, 1 million's unbelievable. But you know what? Carpenter's Farm that has sold zero, somewhat intentionally, is just as wonderful. So.
Absolutely. Well, Josh, thank you very much for coming on and being guest. This has been an awesome discussion.
Yeah, thank you. I really loved how, I was a little nervous heading in, like, oh my God, we're gonna talk for an hour, and right, I mean, that's a minute, but when I looked, the first time I looked up at the clock, it had already been like 45 minutes or something. That was a really, really great talk, and as you said, it went fluidly from here to there without being forced at all. That was wonderful. Thank you.
You are most welcome, and you are welcome to come back anytime you want.
Right on. And I would love to see you in Toronto if Allison and I when we go again.
We can do that. So, just for everybody else, thanks for coming out, listening to our wonderful discussion of stuff and stuff. Didn't even mention squirrels. Oh, I do have one more question. What's your favorite kind of cookie?
I kind of like those lemon sugar cookies.
Okay. We can still be friends. Everybody out there in After All Out, have yourself an amazing time. Be awesome. Be well. Be all the things that you need to be, whether or not it needs to be this thing or that thing or whatever. It's like, I'm not going to judge. Have a good one. And may the. Oh, crap. Secret Empire first issue episode comes out today. I got to watch that soon. So come back again every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, wherever the hell that is for you or whatever. Find us on the Facebooks, find us on the Twitter, find us on Instagram. Have all the fun with all the fun stuff.